CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. We are live. This is CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. It's somehow already the 20th of October. I don't even know how this stuff happened. I know Ben would say, because he hates it when we talk about the calendar, but to me, it always feels extremely weird when, you know, you open your eyes and suddenly you see you're on the 20th of October. And I mean, who can remember when we went into lockdown on March 26th? You know, that's 207 days ago. You know that? 7 days since we started doing shows like this.
Well, just like clockwork. Yeah, my dad has updated 208, yes.
Oh, 208.
He's been beating every single day for us.
All right. Well, either way, it's just unbelievable. 208 days. So morning, Sia's here, Mbulelo's here, and we will be joined by Pumelele a little bit later on as well. So we've got a nice busy show for you this morning and lots to talk about. I don't know about you, but I'm getting an inordinate amount of spam mail, more than ever before. I think it's desperate people who are doing, you know, trying to defraud other people who have a little bit of money left. And for example, I get these emails with like purchase order written on them, but it's from companies that we've got no dealings with, companies we've never invoiced or done business with or any of that stuff. And they seem to be like, it looks legit, you know? But I know for a fact that it can't be a legitimate business, because the one is like a back clinic. And I mean, to my knowledge, we have yet to do work with a clinic that deals with people's back problems. Do you know what I mean?
Funny you mentioned that, because I've received my first spam SMS recently, and it was just that. It was the same as one of those emails. I just instantly blocked them. But he says, "Hello, happy weekend to you. I'm Matthew Chua, Hong Kong bank staff. Can I trust you and transfer 16,291 to you? To you, letter U, email." He puts his email address for more information. Okay.
Yeah, that's totally legit.
And it's from a South African number. That's what I don't understand.
That's so weird, huh?
Right?
We're trying to, there's some kind of an issue with our Comrex machine this morning, so we connected a little differently. I see Dope Smoke saying your sound is going from stereo to mono to stereo on the app. It's very weird.
Uh-huh.
So I wonder if there's something going on in the studio. Bulelo, do you see any funny business happening on the desk in front of you? Okay, then maybe it's just Dope Smoke's phone. I love that name, Dope Smoke.
No.
Well, let's get cracking this morning. There's lots to talk about. You know, Bulelo will raise this on his own, but it's something that I brought up the other day when I was talking about the river in front of my house, and I took that picture of how people had just thrown shit into. Yeah, obviously it's just stuff they've thrown away, and it's ended up in the river, because that's what happens when it rains. Everything flows down into the rivers, and then, you know, it backs up. And it's a massive issue, and I actually got emails from people as a result of that post on Instagram and the conversation we had on cliffcentral.com, people who run these cleanup campaigns, you know, where they dress a bunch of people in overalls and boots and gloves, and they get them to clean this stuff up. And you know, we live in a country where we have a huge number of unemployed people, And I know for a fact that there are many of us who do have jobs, or who create jobs for other people, who would be more than willing to pay for someone unemployed to get in there and just clean up the litter. You know, we don't want anyone to be in danger, in health danger, by, you know, getting into like open sewers. But this seems like something that can be done fairly easily. You just need a garbage picker and a bag, and we need to fill those up and just take them away to, you know, where they can destroy the rubbish. And
or at least, are you patient enough to wait until election season? Because, you know, the political parties will start cleaning up then.
No, they don't even clean up litter. I don't think our parties care enough for that.
My ward does.
Who? Your ward?
My ward really? Does. When it's election season, you see them all donning their party regalia. They'll do everything at that point. They'll even go to the primary school and kiss babies if they need to.
Yes, sons of bitches. Morning,
good
Pumela.
Morning. We've got you.
Yeah, Pums, we can hear you, but apparently it's not going through.
Sorry, this is Pumela. You told me that's water in a wine glass, right?
Yeah, sparkling water in a wine glass. This kind of heat.
How are you, Pums?
Hey, guys. So, yeah, the getting on this morning was a joy. But here was we it, are.
Easy, or are you being sarcastic?
No, it was hectic. It's hectic. We might need to all wake up a little bit earlier and do a test run.
Figure it out.
before we're supposed to go live.
Well, in the meantime, while we're getting cracking here, I know you've been doing this as much as I have around the house lately. I was talking last week about how I was moving furniture on my own. But moving things around and doing DIY, and I told you I was rewiring lamps and all that kind of thing.
Yay! Quite a hectic one.
It's exhausting, though. I mean, I felt like I'd done two cardio sessions by the time I'd finished. Seriously, it was like way more exhausting than doing gym.
I like DIY. I like DIY and like cleaning and fixing stuff. But I kind of thought, you know, with all the kind of staying home and whatever, maybe I should take on a big-ish project. You know, something that requires the drill. I was humbled into realizing that I need to call a handyman.
What were you trying to do?
So I bought one of those awnings and I was gonna. It was quite something. It's a two-man job, not a single woman job.
So is this an awning that you'd hang over an outside door?
Yeah. My bedroom has this huge sliding door, whatever, and I'm trying to sort out. And when we have these hectic storms, it kind of water comes in underneath the door. So I'm kind of trying to solve a bit of a flooding issue with an awning. I'll see if that works. It's quite something, though.
Just the need to have to figure out an awning and whether you drill or not and the 16 different types of screws. No, I would have called someone ages ago.
Yeah, it's weird. You mentioned this, but this is something I was talking about just the other day. I saw there's this whole channel of people who just flip houses and do DIY and build pools. And it's like a whole channel on DSTV. There might even be more than one channel for all I know.
Definitely,
this is my thing. I think that's the thing that kind of got into my head that says, look at these, you know, flimsy looking Americans. And I'm a sturdy African. I could do this. Yeah. It's like they do all sorts of things, like we'll tear down the staircase and build a new one.
As you point out in your story just now, some of it is a more than one person job, and you can't do it all on your own. And sometimes expertise is called for. Like, don't ever ask me if it's stuff that involves plugs in the wall or, you know, like complicated electrics. You've got to get
people go to school for that. People actually go to school for that one, Gareth. But I think just a little bit of painting of something, a little bit of, you know, that I can do.
Sure, and you know, the kind of stuff that when you're moving things around and you're rewiring something yourself, like a plug or a lamp, like I said, that kind of thing is totally doable. But putting up a huge big awning, you're going to need someone to hold that while you mark the little holes and you get the screwdriver. I mean the drill, and you're going to need to have plugs, and someone's going to make sure the ladder doesn't fall under you. I mean, there's a lot going on. You try and do that on your own, you injure yourself. How will you explain that to the rest of the family when they find out that you're in hospital because the awning fell down on you?
And it is also, you know, because I have a little balcony, so a small balcony on a chair. It's kind of, it was quite a something. Although it did also make me feel a little bit like my mom, because I remember my mom used to get into it. And this is the time of the year. It's that spring cleaning vibe.
Spring cleaning, yeah. Absolutely.
That spring cleaning vibe, right? It's like dust, cobwebs.
Oh, listen, you're speaking my language now. This is like music to my head.
Is this your love language, Gareth?
Oh, I love this. You know what I'm going to do this week? I've earmarked throwing out all the stuff in my cupboards that I don't wear anymore and things that don't fit or things that are, you know, you sometimes keep t-shirts.
Wait, what? You throw them out? You don't give them?
No. I'll explain what I do in a minute. Okay. What I mean is I don't use them anymore. So if I go through my cupboard, and you know sometimes you find a t-shirt that you've kept, but it has a little mark on the shoulder or whatever that's really, you know, it's like, you know, it's not an expensive t-shirt. It's a 100 rand t-shirt or whatever. And you don't need it anymore, but you know that you're not going to wear it with that mark on it. So that's the kind of thing, you know, you put that in the charity bag and you donate it somewhere or something. If you keep, and I love my cupboards to be less choices, because if I have too many choices in there, then it takes me too long to get dressed. And it's stupid.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing that Zuckerberg, I think, gets right. He gets very little right in his life because he's. But one thing he gets right is he's got that boring uniform of his with the gray t-shirts and the blue jeans that he wears every single day, because it's one more choice you don't have to have every day. It's
why do you think I wear black every day? Everything right. I have in my cupboards matches.
It's much less taxing on your brain, decision taxing, because every decision you make requires a huge amount of mental energy, and that could take away from things that actually require your energy for important decisions. And you know, whether you wear a blue t-shirt or a green one, it shouldn't really make that much of a difference.
So I want to know if in that charity bag of stuff, do you put underwear in there? Do you give your underwear away or do you throw your underwear away?
No, you see what I do is I
what's wrong, Sia?
I throw underwear that has become disintegrated and holy and all that kind of thing. I throw that away because who's going to want to wear your old underwear, right?
It disintegrated and holy.
I mean, what do you do, Sia?
So much unpack here. Wait, people donate underwear?
No, I hope not.
I hope not too.
I do my bras and stuff. Like what?
Oh, that's a little too close for comfort.
No, something that's been. I'm not seeing this one.
Oh, guys.
You can't donate that stuff. I know that there are people who probably would need
it.
Yeah, but still, come on. You can't make them wear your panties.
And actually, okay, maybe there might be something different with a brassiere. That's up your nook cranny. No one should have to wear that again. No. Okay.
All right.
You know, I do not lead a superstitious life by any means, but my mom would never let us actually throw our underwear out. She would first rip all of them and then we'd go out to the bride and make a little bonfire on the side and we burn it up. She says, no one must see your secrets.
Oh, really? That was her line? Wow. Okay, well, I'm with your mother. I mean, what can I say? I think that's quite sensible. Okay, so...
You thought, what, somebody would bewitch your underwears, yeah?
I don't know, but I also just don't want things...
So maybe Pumi's got a point, because it's up to whoever's going through your old clothes to decide if they want it, right?
No, I don't even want that person to decide. I'm just not giving it to you. It's weird to me.
It's clean, guy. You like wash it. And it's, you know, nicely bleached. And send it off on a new life.
Yeah, okay. You can do that. I don't think that there are people asking for all
And then next week, really, it was a month.
You have got to be very excited about this. Now, I can't wait to do the cupboards. I'm going to probably do them tomorrow. This is exciting.
I'm sure people are going to send us messages and say that they give away their underwear.
You know what is good about doing that cupboard clean out too, is you realize that like there's some things that you really don't need. So often you'll go to the shops and you'll buy stuff thinking you need it, like socks, you know. You'll think you need more socks, but then when you go through your drawers and your cupboards and you're like, but Jesus, I've got a ton of these things. I don't need any more.
You always need more socks. They go missing. I've got like 10 single socks that I have to throw out because you can't even give that shit away. Where is the other sock?
Well, they say that there's a secret place that all the half pairs of socks go to. You know, it's like sock heaven. And then they live there forever. But often, have you ever gone behind your washing machine or your tumble dryer? That is a deadly place. There are some scary things that happen behind a tumble dryer or a washing machine. Because usually it's closed in on three sides, right? So things slip in on the sides or over the top to the back. You'll find some stuff there. Sometimes you'll find things that that's where that is. The other thing you must look at is you must actually occasionally lift your mattress of your bed because sometimes there are things that slip in there.
That is when you do a proper clean. Did you hear that? When you do a proper clean, at least once a month. Move that shit around.
That's right. That's right.
It's you and the changing of the sheets that's brought that. I'll tell you that. But okay, so Gareth, here's what I do need to know as I embark on my little 6 weeks. I'm giving myself 6 weeks.
Sure.
Of doing all these little.
That's a very long
time. No, but that's only six Saturdays.
Okay.
Six Saturdays.
Right. You're pushing 1 day a week. All right. Cool.
Yeah. No. I'm not like spending because I'm also busy, right? So it's a little bit of time and to give myself time to watch TV and stuff. There's great things happening on TV.
Okay.
So what are the basics that I need? I have a drill. I have a set of screwdrivers. And I have those little spanners. What are the basic kind of tools? I see like sanders. Now I look at and I think, ooh, maybe I should get one of those. I wonder what I could do with that.
Unless you're doing actual carpentry, you don't need those. You need paintbrushes. You need hammer, nails.
I've got a hammer.
Okay. You need – what's quite useful is an electric screwdriver. That'll save you a ton of time. Because sitting there with a screwdriver going like this is a pain. Usually they come with all the different bits on them so that you don't have to, you know, you just change it there and then. That's been a really helpful thing to have. You probably need glue and silicone. Like I would get wood glue.
Got
that. Some of that silicone to fill things. Polyfiller is useful. You need some of that. What else do you need?
I'll send you pics. I also got a weed, a weed killer for the garden, and I got one of those little things with the spray. It's quite looks. I'm into this. Yeah, I'm gonna get a little tripod and put my phone and do time lapses.
If you really want to have fun, you know what's a nice thing to have is one of those high pressure cleaners for like your pavement. If you've got a lot of pavements outside.
I don't have a lot of pavement, though.
No, then don't worry. Then it's a waste of money. But I'll tell you what. There are probably suggestions coming in from people who are listening who are even more into this than I am. So let me
give you some. People must send us stuff because I'm out here getting into it. I'm going to do nice, like wood. I've got a wooden kind of pergola thing. Painted up nicely.
So listen to this. Just on the previous matter, Pichleng says, bras you can donate, but panties, poor me. Oh, hell no. This is just an insult when you donate underwear. So Pichleng is definitely against that idea. All right, let's take a listen to this one. This comes through from MK. All right.
With me, I'm with you. not the undies, but bras. Bras are expensive, and there are a lot of people that need bras. So it's clean. You've washed it. You're not going to give them a manky old bra.
So there we go. MK saying you're not going to give them a manky old bra, but a bra is something people need. So, yes, you should donate those.
Yeah, well.
Here we go. Yes. Israel says you need a cordless drill with screwdriver bits. More fun than using screwdrivers, and you can make holes with it. Sai says you need a handyman. Just get a handyman. Yeah. But I think part of the fun is doing it yourself. And if you screw up, you screw up. Do you know what I did the other day? I replaced a door handle.
I think it's selective fun, Gareth.
What's that?
I think it's selective fun. Like if it's a thrill for you, that's great. For me, there's nothing better than to call a delivery service after 5 days and say, hey, the product you delivered doesn't work. Here you go. You take it back.
Oh, really?
And you bring it back when it's sorted. It's just, there's no sense of satisfaction. I've never had that thing of putting something together and I step back and I put my hands on my hips and go, wow, look at what I did.
You're missing out, Sia.
Yeah, there's a whole other world out here. Whole other world out here.
I know.
It's the reason we did puzzles when we were in nursery school. It's so that you can learn to do this kind of stuff.
I was fine to give a horse a plant for a face. Just move on.
All right. Well, we've got a bunch of headlines to get to. It is 8:30 already. In fact, it's just a little bit further than that along the way. Eskom has deliberately cut power to large parts of Tshwane today. Apparently, the power utility implemented so-called load reduction in many communities, saying it was trying to protect its network from overloading. Affected customers could expect their plug points to work again at 9 a.m. So if you don't have power and you're in Tshwane, that is on Pepos, because Tshwane has decided to cut your power this morning. Apparently there's...
So the city has made that decision.
Yeah. So it's not Eskom. The ex-Transnet board chair has implicated Malusi Gigaba in Gama's reinstatement. Now, this is a big deal. Apparently, the former Transnet board chairperson, Mafika Mkhwanazi, has submitted a supplementary affidavit that includes an admission that former cabinet minister Malusi Gigaba directed him to review the dismissal of former CEO Siyabonga Gama.
I want to say I have no relation to this person.
No. From the Mkhwanazi side, huh?
Yeah, no relation. But it was, it's my favorite soapy to watch, right? Days of Zondo.
The Zondo Commission.
And this guy is competent, years of an incredible executive.
Who are we
with
talking about? Mkhwanazi or
Mafika? Mafika Mkhwanazi. Mafika Mkhwanazi. With a sterling career behind him as he then takes on. And to watch him dithering at the commission yesterday is just excruciating at the best of times. But so, if anything, so telling of how terrible and unscrupulous politicians can be.
Yeah,
because they exert their power, and he's left there holding the baby or the dirty dishwater, whichever one it is, right? And he has to kind of justify his actions, and all because there was so bearing down on him from the political. And what do those guys have besides the fact that they've just moved on? They've all moved on, and here he is.
He's left with a mess.
His legacy in tatters. Now everybody is kind of like going, who's this guy? What does he do? They know who what he did for him.
Well,
they're all just going.
I mean, the Deputy Chief Justice, Rem Dondo, who runs this commission, said Gigaba and Gama would at some point testify before the State Capture Commission. But guess what? At the moment, they're not available. So this poor guy is taking all the heat. And he's probably not the one who made those decisions. As he's just said, he submitted that, Gigaba was behind a lot of this. So those politicians must pay. Because let me tell you something. It is hard enough to run a business. As you know, Pumi, as so many people in this country know, it's hard enough to run a business. It's much harder to run a business when there's constant interference, especially if it's a state-owned enterprise and you are being interfered with by politicians who really have no qualifications whatsoever, you know?
Except for the fact that they've got, like, popular, like, opinion behind it.
They want a popularity contest and they think they know stuff. And I feel sorry for people like this because, you know, they arrive there and his job is to balance the books and to make sure that they hire the right staff and to make sure the business works properly and all of those things, you know, maintain a kind of an oversight of the whole thing. And then over and above him, someone gets put in place who tells him what to do. And sometimes those things go against what would make the business work. And we wonder why we have so many problems in our state-owned enterprises. It's because politicians meddle in affairs that have nothing to do with them. And this is a perfect
No, but it's also like, you know, having no backbone. Let this be a lesson to you all out there. As your careers rise, have the backbone to say no to politicians.
Well, in other news, with competition among Earth's telecom providers as fierce as ever, equipment maker Nokia, remember them? Well, Nokia have announced their expansion into a new market on Monday, winning a deal to install the first cellular network on the moon. So if you're on the moon,
then you'll have good signal.
Yeah, absolutely. Ah, there's Jean-Jacques Cornish. We're going to speak to him in a minute. The Finnish equipment manufacturer said it was selected by NASA to deploy an ultra-compact, low-power, space-hardened wireless 4G network on the lunar surface as a part of the U.S. Space Agency's plan to establish a long-term human presence on the moon by 2030. So that's quite interesting. And that is part of a 14.1 million rand contract, a million dollar contract that was awarded to Nokia's U.S. subsidiary. It's part of NASA's Artemis program, which aims to send the first woman and the next man to the moon by 2024. And before anybody hops on the bandwagon of saying, oh, we're sending people to the moon is a waste of time and a waste of money, you're not looking at the big picture, because a lot of the time those are things that add enormous scientific advances to humankind and help us to figure out things we didn't know we had problems with. So let's
like we
let's
wouldn't have ways, guys. If there hadn't been a space race, we wouldn't have Waze.
Correct. And look how great Waze is on a daily basis. So let's turn our attention to the U.S. election, which is only a few days away now. There is a new debate that is on. Apparently, this is part of the plan for this week. U.S. President Donald Trump and his White House challenger Joe Biden are feuding over plans for their final TV debate. The Republican president's campaign accused organizers of this week's showdown of helping the Democrat by leaving out foreign policy as a topic. The Biden camp shot back that Mr. Trump was trying to avoid questions about his response to the coronavirus pandemic. But in case you didn't notice, Joe Biden's son Hunter has been implicated in all kinds of very obvious fraud and the emergence of new evidence this week, which makes it look like Joe Biden actually did know about that and that he's been lying. And that's probably why he doesn't want to talk about foreign policy. But Joe went into hiding last Thursday and has not emerged since. He's been in his basement for the whole of the last 4 or 5 days. And I think that that's probably the weirdest thing any candidate has ever done in campaign history. So there are a lot of questions that need answering. Anyway, we'll see what happens because the debate is scheduled to take place on Thursday. And we'll see whether or not there are new rules put in place, either to make it easier for Biden or to make it easier for Trump.
And hopefully it will be less weird than that town hall. It will be less weird than that town hall we all witnessed last week. That was
unbelievable.
Rather strange.
Very strange. Well, all that happened with the ABC one is that Joe Biden got a massage from George Stephanopoulos. And not one single tough question. And on the other channel, Savannah Guthrie seemed to eviscerate Donald Trump with all the hard questions. So I think that there may be some call for this debate to at least appear to be as fair as possible, but we'll see. Now, the last story in the headlines I'm actually going to save for Jean-Jacques to tell us about, because it's about Donald Trump, who says he's set to remove Sudan from the state sponsors of terrorism list. And we'll find out about that and more with Jean-Jacques Cornish right now. We're lucky to be joined by him. And this is something which I look forward to every couple of weeks. The latest information on Africa. Well, you're just in time for JJ Cornish and Africa Analysis, a bi-monthly feature which is sponsored by the Johannesburg Business School. With each of these, we look right into what is the breaking news of the continent as seen through our trusted JJ's eyes. And we're going to get straight into it today. JJ Cornish, how are you, sir?
I'm immensely well, and I appreciate your asking me.
Thank you. So can we start with this story, which is quite a big deal, and it only broke yesterday, really. Donald Trump might remove Sudan from the state sponsors of terrorism list. This is obviously good news for Sudan.
Very good news indeed. It's not new. This has been mooted now for some months, and we didn't even have Mike Pompeo going to Sudan, which was very unusual. The fact is, though, with the removal of Omar al-Bashir, and we'll talk about that a little later, the Sudanese have moved back into the order. I mean, Sudan, once the largest country in Africa, now broken with into South Sudan as well, it's very important that it should fall back into the international fold properly. And being kicked out by the United States as a state sponsor of terrorism, I mean, they did have Osama bin Laden sheltering there for a long, long time. Right. This is the prize being held out to the transitional government, half military, half civilian, that's come into power. And they've now made peace, and so things are moving well in Sudan, very well indeed. And for them then to be removed from the state sponsor of terrorism list, it would put them back into dealing with the United States on a more even keel. That people would be able to travel there, they'd be able to make deals. It would be a very good thing for Sudan. The United States is sort of holding it up still as a kind of a bait, in a way, in the sense that they're hoping to get them to democratize properly. And this half government, half military, half civilian government is doing good things. They are. I mean, if we move right into the issue of Darfur that I was speaking about, Fatou Bensouda, the ICC prosecutor, is actually in Darfur at the moment. That's the first time anyone from the ICC has been there since 2005, when the United Nations Security Council referred the Darfur question to the ICC. Now, there they have 2.5 million people displaced, 350,000 people, 400,000 people killed in fighting there that started in 2003 and turned Darfur into the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Now, the ICC indicted Omar al-Bashir. Do you remember when he came to South Africa for that African Union summit? And we were asked to hold on to him. Don't let him go. And of course, he slipped out. This was under President Zuma. So, you know, very controversial. He's been allowed to travel, or been able to travel around Africa, but nowhere else because of this indictment by the ICC. And now interestingly, the transitional government in Khartoum is not saying, yes, we will hand over Omar al-Bashir, who was ousted last April 2019. But he is imprisoned at the moment for corruption. And, but they're saying, we will help you with your seeking justice for Darfur. So they're saying they'll do that, which means they've really got a handover, Omar al-Bashir. It's going to be very interesting what that means and how the rest of Africa looks at that, because the ICC is a very controversial body in terms of in the view of Africa.
Can we turn our attention to a little-known country for most of us, Guinea? It's a country on the west coast of Africa. And for many people, it would be difficult to find Guinea on the map. But they have they just had an election, haven't they?
They have indeed. You know, the most interesting thing there, Cliff, you know, Guinea was the country when France decolonized, and Guinea came very early on in 1958. They said, c'est fini, ça suffit, we've had a guts full of you guys. And they didn't want to have any kind of relationship with France afterwards. So the French, in their Gallic way, said, okay, fine, we're going. And when they left, they took the light bulbs with them. I mean, you know, they took every single thing. And then that was it. Now we have had Alpha Conde, when he was elected 2 terms ago, he was the first democratically elected president in Guinea. And he's been there for 2 terms. I mean, his father had been before him. That family has been around for a long time running Guinea. He had a referendum earlier in the year, and it became clear that he was planning a third term, controversial third term. And they're standing and they're doing that. They've had 200 people die in violence as a result of it. The elections were on Sunday. They were pretty tense. We're hoping that the opposition, his name is Sello Diallo, he's been beaten twice before. I don't know what it is in African tradition that if you get beaten, you go for, I don't know, for three-time lucky. And this is his time to try again. Maybe a 3-time loser, I don't know. You know, all lives are shaken into some sort of pattern, you know, that only makes sense retrospectively, Cliff. And here we have, this is what's happening in Guinea. We do have elections later in the month.
What kind of a country is Guinea? I mean, what are their main exports? Are the people there reasonably okay, or are they desperately poor? What are the circumstances inside Guinea? I mean, why would someone like me want to visit that place?
Well, it's a beautiful little country in West Africa. It has minerals, 12.5 million population, but it's poor. It's poor because of corruption from the top, as is the case in so many, in too many African countries.
Right.
So I mean, you'd want to go there because it's a beautiful West African country. It doesn't have much tourism infrastructure. And as I say, it does export. And then, of course, they would grow things like cotton and they would have crops. But they do have minerals, and that is very important. And I was mentioning the elections. We have further elections, of course. We have elections in the Seychelles. We have elections in Tanzania. But interestingly, on the 31st of October, we have elections in Cote d'Ivoire. And there we have Alassane Ouattara, who was going to stand down. But he's the prime minister whom he'd named to take over from him actually died. So he's got to, he maintains he has to stand for a third time. But the population's not very happy about that, saying you cannot, in terms of the constitution, have a third term. So this issue of standing another time is very, very, very fraught. And Barack Obama had the best thing to say about that. He said, if you haven't got the job done in 2 terms, you know, don't think for a minute you'll be able to get it done in 3. Step down, get out of the way, make way for somebody else.
Now, interesting. I mean, Guinea is not the same as Guinea-Bissau. That's a different country.
No, this is, they call it Guinea-Conakry because the capital is Conakry. Guinea, right. And it's a former French colony. Guinea-Bissau, of course, is the Portuguese colony. Guinea-Bissau is a transit state, has become a bit of a sort of a drug state, a bit of a narco state, because the drugs moving from Latin America through to Guinea-Bissau, which has had several coups, always transit through Guinea-Bissau. So they're trying to overcome that. That's one of the big problems they have. But Guinea-Bissau is a country which has political difficulties, grown-up political difficulties.
Okay, so let's talk about Libya for a second, because Libyan military leaders are in Geneva at the moment, hoping to negotiate a UN-brokered permanent ceasefire. I mean, Libya's been an absolute mess since Muammar Gaddafi was removed from power. And for better or for worse, I'm sure that the Obama administration had their reasons for doing that. Of course, nothing has really gone well for them ever since then. And what is the current state of affairs? And what do Europe have to do with this? What does the UN have to do with this?
Well, you know, Africa can't do it. And we talk about African solutions for African problems. The United Nations has had to step in. And you know, I mean, if we were talking when we'd first started talking about doing this crossing about February this year, you would have had the same intro, because the Libyans would have been in Geneva in February this year, and that thing broke up. Now we have Khalifa Haftar, the rebel leader, backed by Egypt, backed by the United Arab Emirates, backed by Russia. He's been driven away from his drive to get hold of Tripoli. And he's wanted peace talks at one point, and the Government of National Accord, headed by Fayez al-Sarraj, has said no. Now, suddenly, Fayez al-Sarraj's position's not all that clever, and he's wanting to have peace talks again. So they keep going. The thing about it is that the danger is that Libya becomes a proxy war. Turkey supports the government of Sarraj, and the other countries, Egypt, as I say, Egypt, Russia, the UAE, and others supporting Khalifa Haftar. Now, if it becomes a proxy war, it's never going to settle down. What they're hoping to get is a permanent ceasefire. But, you know, I think I mentioned to you that if I had a buck for every time we talked about them sitting down to do that, I could have retired, because it's just on and on and on it goes. They need to have elections within the next 18 months. And for that, they've been talking about that so many times as well. Khalifa Haftar says he will reopen the oil fields, which he closed because of his insurgency. And that might bring some money back to Libya. You know, we talk about Libya being an oil power. It certainly is. But it's not, it's probably in the top six or so in Africa. It's not really that big. So it needs everything it can get. And it's an absolute arsenal of weapons. And it has been fueling, under Muammar Gaddafi, fueling insurgencies in other African countries. So it really is a kind of a stockade of insecurity. Most of the migrants going to Greece and to Italy from Africa go through Libya. And so, when that settles down. When that settles down, when they have stability in Libya, it is going to mean stability for the whole of the Maghreb, the Mashrek, the north of Africa, and will have enormous benefits for the whole of southern Europe too.
So, Jean-Jacques, I mean, how bad is the situation in Libya? Would you prefer to be in a country like Sudan or Somalia than Libya? Is it that bad? Because it's been completely incendiary since Muammar Gaddafi was killed there, and nothing seems to have improved the condition of the average person in Libya.
Absolutely. I think if you ask me, it's kind of Hobson's choice, but I would take any of those countries above Libya. Fayez al-Sarraj, the prime minister, is stepping down this month. Once the talks in Geneva finish, he is stepping down. And there's corruption charges and other things. There's a lot of pressure on him. So he wants to go. So Libya is that bad that even the prime minister doesn't want to be the prime minister there.
Pums.
So I have a question. I've been, you know, I think one of the things here in South Africa that seems to every now and again be a flare-up is the issue of migrant laborers and the issue of xenophobia here in South Africa. And I've been doing quite a lot of reading and kind of trying to understand the interdependence of SADC, of these various countries, which were all British colonies, and how the minerals moved between each of those countries, how the food systems moved in on their way back to England, right? And I'm wondering if a similar thing happens. If I think about the French colonies in West Africa and how their interdependence, and how when they all became singular countries on their own and the interdependence broken up, is one of the reasons why there's so much instability in those areas. Even looking at kind of that north where Libya is, those interdependencies and why corruption is so high, because they're all trying to work as a single entity, whereas actually it works better as a unit, as an interdependent unit. What do you think of that?
Well, absolutely. Libya's interest is two things. Of course, the oil, and two, its geographic position on the Mediterranean. You know, when you look at that Mediterranean basin, you have countries like
Egypt,
you know, Egypt, of course, will be one. But, you know, Algeria, then you have Tunisia, which it plays the game of being a Mediterranean country, an African country, an Arab country. But its location on the Mediterranean seaboard makes it enormously important. And people like Emmanuel Macron saying, well, it's just across the water from us. You know, they're neighbors, close neighbors to Europe. Now, the reason why Libya is so corrupt is, again, because of its position and because of the interest, the colonial interest in Libya. Of course, the country that holds the card or runs the desk, as it were, would be the Italians. When I visited Libya and interviewed Muammar Gaddafi, in Tripoli at the time, who was there but a bunch of Italians, all trying to get back in and overcome the sanctions that Muammar Gaddafi had incurred upon himself. It was, of course, Nelson Mandela who told the world, stop sanctioning this guy, let him come back in and let this country prosper. It will mean something for the whole of Africa. So it's the sphere of influence for Libya is Italian, as it is Eritrea, for example, is also Italian. But it's the one country, that was effectively colonized by Italy.
Well, that's unfortunately all we've got time for today. But Jean-Jacques, it's always enlightening to hear from you. And thank you very much for your expertise. Tell me just quickly before you go, that interview with Muammar Gaddafi, what did you glean from that as just the kind of the top line and most interesting things, especially now as a result of the fact that he's dead and there are no more interviews to be had with him? Tell us about that experience.
Well, I got the distinct impression that Muammar Gaddafi was, to put a kind Irish expression to it, away with the fairies, you know. He spoke very, very, very quietly. He speaks very quietly like this, so that you have to lean in and listen to him. He was not very steady on his feet. He'd had problems with his health. But he essentially was trying to tell us, as South Africans, you know, just how much he valued what Nelson Mandela had done in trying to bring him back in. But the impression I got from about Muammar Gaddafi in a single sentence was that he wore his sunglasses on the inside of his eyes.
What an interesting point of view. I love it. Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques. Your experiences here are invaluable, and it's always interesting to hear your take on these things, especially because you have such a depth of knowledge. So there we go, our little African analysis, which we do bi-monthly. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and we're very happy to have Jean-Jacques Cornish here with us as regularly as possible. Thank you. We'll speak to you soon.
À la prochaine.
Very good. Pumi Mashiho is with me. We've just spoken to Jean-Jacques. We've got Sian Mbulelo in the wings, and we will return in just a moment on CliffCentral.com.